life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape.
Brings you one of the most unusual and terrifying stories of recent years. It is a story of such scope that the producers of Escape, in order to dramatize its full impact, will present in two episodes. So now, with the performance of John Daner as Isherwood Williams, we bring you part one of George Stewart's powerful novel, Earth Abides. Killing type of virus strain should suddenly arrive by mutation. It could, because of the rapid transportation in which we indulge nowadays, be carried to the far corners of the earth and cause the death of millions of people. If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should wake to a man-dead world, where virtually all of human life had been dissolved from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go? My name is Isherwood Williams. I'm a student of ecology. I was in the Northern California wilderness gathering specimens of rock, plant, and animal life. I was alone, and had been for a month. Climbing up to a sharp ledge one day, I felt a sudden sharp pain in my extended right hand. I withdrew it under reflex and looked up, and there, a foot above my head, I saw him, a rattler coiled, ready to strike again. Slowly, carefully, I lowered myself. Then I lay down on my cot. I felt sick. Sick because of the poison. Sick because I was alone. And weak. In a few moments, deep, warm blackness closed in about me. I don't know how long I was unconscious, but I was awakened by the door.
Harry, look here. This one's still alive, I think.
Oh, I'm glad you came. I'm sick.
He's still alive, all right. Don't go near him. Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait. I'm sick. Come back. Why? Why did they leave me when they knew I was sick? What were they afraid of? I tried to stand. My knees were like sponge rubber. Finally, I was able to stumble to my chest of drawers. Then I saw the hammer, my rock hammer, resting on the top of the chest. And it suddenly became the most important thing in the world to me. If I can lift this hammer, I told myself, I will live. I wrapped my fingers at its handle, and I lifted it slowly. Then let it down. I breathed a sigh of relief. I would live. In the morning, I felt better. I got up, packed the car, and headed for the nearest town, Hudsonville, about 10 miles to the south. They'd take care of me in Hudsonville. Consider, if you will, the case of the wreck that once inhabited Christmas Island, a small bit of tropical verdure some 200 miles south of Java. In 1903, a new disease sprang up. The rats proved universally susceptible and soon were dying by the thousands. In spite of great numbers, in spite of an abundant supply of food, in spite of a rapid breeding rate, the species is now extinct. familiar houses, stores, taverns, but no one in the streets. A hen scratched quietly in the dust. A lonely dog was howling somewhere. I got out of the car and walked into the little restaurant. The place was empty. Hey. Is anybody here? Hey! Silence. Deathly silence. On the counter, I saw a newspaper. Flipped it open. The headline, prices, acute. I read the story, a dispatch from Washington. The federal government is herewith suspended. It's the emergency. All officers, including those of the armed forces, put themselves under the orders of any functioning local authority by order of the acting president. Front page, column 3.
The West Oakland Hospitalization Center has been abandoned. Its functions, including burials at sea, are now concentrated at the Berkeley Center. Keep tuned to your radio.
The radio. The radio in my car. I turned the dial to the most powerful station in the vicinity. Static. Desperately, I twisted it from one end of the band to the other, praying for a human voice, a bar of music, anything. There wasn't a single radio station still in operation. The horn. Someone will hear the horn.
I'm the only one left. The dirtiest, skunk of a rat. What am I doing alive? Answer me that.
Go back to sleep.
Wait. It's free. On the house. Everything's on the house now. Have a drink.
No, thanks.
Let me tell you why I'm still alive. Because I'm being punished. I'm not good enough for that.
Goodbye, Mr. Barlow.
Hey, come on back. I'll buy you a drink. I'll buy you a drink. Look here, I got $500. I took it from the bank yesterday. Why are you here? $500.
Thank you. of the most luxurious hotels. I slept and ate from the leavings of 150 million people. All the wealth of America had been bequeathed to me. All its wealth. And its death.
3 days later, I pulled up the Pulaski Skyway, crossed George Washington Bridge, came to Manhattan. Splendid, slow decaying corpse of Fifth Avenue, the sable mink in the windows, the silly traffic lights changing color at naked intersections. Manhattan, soulless and dead. Stretched out between its rivers, the city will remain for a long time. Stone and brick, concrete and asphalt, glass. Time deals gently with them. A window pane loosens. Dusty wind. Lightning strikes. Loosens the tiles of a corner. The shade trees on the avenues die in their shallow pockets. Bats fly from the 59th floor. City dies slowly. In the afternoon, I saw a smoke from a chimney in the Bronx. I drove to the house, a small house, and knocked on the door. I heard footsteps. The door opened, I saw a little bald man with a broad smile, holding a handful of playing cards.
Well, Carson, how do you do? Come on in, you're in time for supper.
Well, thanks, I just ate.
This is Carson.
How are you?
Won't you sit down?
Thanks.
Where are you from?
California.
I had a relative there.
We're just finishing a hand of the inn. Say, look here. Isn't that a beauty?
Oh, the television set? Yes. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a combination radio, television set, radio player. I'll bet it even does the washing. It took us 2 days to get it up the steps from the radio store.
I always wanted a set like that.
But there's nothing on the air.
Sir, I always wanted a set like that. Jim, there you are.
I owe you
$10,000. Yeah, I'll give it to me tomorrow. There's a busted window at the Chase National. All the money you want. I carry $50,000 with me all the time just to be on the safe side.
Of course, you can't buy anything with it now, but
here's
a nice to carry around.
How about some salami?
No, thanks. I just
paid. Oh, yeah. Say, you like canasta?
No, not much at cards.
Oh, canasta, I can teach you. It's simple, like salami, but a little different. What I was wondering was, why don't you stay here? I got everything you'd want right here in the Bronx. Need a coat for the lady, break a window at I.J. Fox. You should see some of the diamonds I got. Mrs. Carson at Tiffany's yesterday. Beauties. Hey, where are you going?
I better get started.
Well, where? There ain't no place to go.
Lots of luck.
Well, thanks. I wish you could stay with us.
No, thanks. Goodbye.
Oh, the scavengers. How long would they last? Through the winter? No, it was doubtful. There'd be no central heating. Even breaking furniture in the fireplace wouldn't keep them alive. They were like highly bred spaniels or Pekingese who walked the city streets at the end of their leashes. They would die with the city a season or two later of pneumonia and accident. The Negro in Oklahoma with his heart to the land, he would survive. No Carson and his new wife? Nah. They were waiting for death at the card table. Later, I was in San Francisco again. The streets were just as bare as when I left. The lights were still on, but dimmer now. Water flowed still from the faucets. But San Francisco had a new population, the dogs. They hunted in packs, all breeds bound together in a common search for food. Danes, Dalmatians, Scotties, Toys, all of them. The dogs had taken over the city. I decided to move back into the house because of the familiar things. Late one afternoon, I went out to look around the neighborhood. I heard the yelping too late. I looked around me and I saw myself being surrounded by dogs. They were hungry, relentlessly hungry. I started to close in. The car was on the street from 50 feet away where I could miss it. They tried to run for me. I killed them. They were after me. He started running on my legs. He reached the car, opened the door, and slammed it.
And they climbed to the window, baring their fangs, their red fangs, wet with hunger. But I was safe. Then the night. And that night, the lights went out. What happened to the lights? I looked out over the city. It was black. Black as death. The age of electricity was over. Finished. And there were candles. Mom kept them for ceremonial occasions in the display, and I found myself hoarding matches and flashlights, candles, piling them up in the corners.
It was only night and day.
Time had lost its meaning. And I had food and clothing. And then I had books to read. The Bible. And I read the Bible.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For thy love is better than wine.
There was a faint but unmistakable light burning that night a mile away in Mount Hill. I got into the car and drove to the light. I parked the car, reached for my hammer. In the window, a shadow moved. As I approached the door, a flashlight caught me in its glare. I stopped, dead still. I waited for someone to say, "Put your hands up. Who are you?" There was a breath of perfume.
That's a nice car.
I can pick up a better one on any street corner.
Come on in.
Thanks.
How about some coffee?
Sounds good.
How come you didn't find it before this?
I just saw the light tonight. I decided to investigate.
I saw your light lots of times.
Oh?
You live down on San Luis Drive.
Well, why didn't you come in?
Woman's crying. Man's supposed to come after the woman.
I was before. And no rules now.
Well, but their habits. Was this black?
Yeah, black's fine. Fine.
I don't want you to think you're the first one I've met. There were five or six of them. They saw the light and it came in. They had coffee and I took them on.
What about me?
I don't know you.
Well, I'm clean, well-educated, healthy, young.
Those are the good things.
I dislike turnips, canned beans, stupid people.
What's your name?
You'll laugh.
I would laugh. What's your name?
Isherwood, my mother's maiden name. Everybody calls me Ish.
Well, mine's Emma. Emma and Ish. Nobody's going to write me a love song for that combination.
No. Don't imagine they will.
I like you. Coffee will be ready now.
Emma, will you come and live with me?
I don't know you.
What is there to know? That I like you, you like me, that we're both alone. Emma. Emma.
Ceremony. How to be some kind of ceremony.
And your Bible?
Bible?
On the mantle.
I've
never used it. I just had it. Here? Your hand. Now, we shall be together. Baby to be born. I had read some books, but I couldn't read enough. I stood by her during the night and tried to help. When the morning came, we had a son, the first born since the great disaster. Then there was the matter of time.
We won't need to know the exact hours.
No, that's true. The clock had stopped, but what's the difference? We eat when we're hungry, and
We're tired and go to bed.
Pick a month and a year. It's important to know when the year ends.
Well, that's what I've been doing out on the porch.
What is that thing out there?
It's a transit. See, I set it towards the sun, and when the sun reaches the winter solstice, I know that to be the shortest day of the year. And that will be our New Year.
New Year's Day isn't the shortest day of the year.
Well, December 21st is. And we'll make that our New Year.
Anne's always been trying to get close to that date for the New Year, but
calendar makers always went off.
How long will it be? A
few days.
And then it'll be 19 what?
No. Under the old calendar. This will be our year one.
The year one. Please call it something. I know. We'll call it the year of the baby.
The new life began around the simple problems of Emma, myself, and the baby. The day came when the sun reversed its path. I took my hammer and a chisel. Emma and I found a tall, smooth rock in what had once been a small public park. In the rock, I carved the figure one. The new beginning, I said to her. The rebirth of man. In the year two, the rats came. San Francisco was overrun with them. They had broken into most of the grocery stores, torn open the cartons, gorged themselves, and gave birth to more rats. They multiplied by the hundreds and then the thousands. Rats, the carriers of deadly bubonic plague.
Where? Get me that kitchen chair. Hurry now, hurry.
I'm going to the bedroom.
I'll hold the chair against the opening. I'll make it later.
The baby!
I rushed into the bedroom, taking my hammer with me. There were two of them from under traps. I stationed myself with a chip. One came toward me, unafraid, for the fear of man had been bred out of them. And I flung the hammer at him. I missed. The rat leaped up into the crib. I threw a blanket over him and flung him down on the floor. Then I picked up the hammer and threw it at the other. Dead. Dead. But that was just two of them. Outside, I could hear hundreds squealing, their tiny feet scratching at the walls. How long would it be before they destroyed us? Man was gone now. This was the age of the rat.
You have just heard part one of Earth Abides by George Stewart. Specially adapted for Escape by David Ellis. Next week, Escape will bring you the second half of Earth Abides, truly one of the most gripping and terrifying novels of recent years. Truly one of the most gripping and terrifying novels of recent years.